Chapter 2. The Shoemaker. Blood. A tall man in dirty clothes wrote with his finger on the wall opposite Defarge's wine shop in Saint-Antoine, Paris.
"Hey, Gaspard, what are you doing?" said Monsieur Defarge, coming out of his shop.
He saw that a large cask of wine was lying broken on the ground, and the street was stained red. Hungry men, women, and children had run over at once to drink the wine from the ground. The tall man laughed loudly.
"The people of Saint-Antoine don't often get to drink wine. The men from the market dropped the cask as they were taking it off the cart."
"Then they must bring me another cask," said Defarge, walking to the wall and wiping the word away with his hand.
"Are you mad, Gaspard? Writing on walls? Go home."
With that, he returned to his shop. Ernest Defarge was a thick-necked man of 30, dressed in good trousers and a clean shirt that showed his strong brown arms to the elbow. His appearance, like that of his shop, compared to the butchers and bakers, was better than that of the poor, hungry people outside. As he passed his wife, she looked up from her knitting and widened her eyes. At this sign from his wife, Defarge looked around him and saw a gentleman of about 60 and a young lady with golden hair seated in the corner. The gentleman stood up and approached Defarge. As Mr. Lorry whispered in his ear, Defarge jumped and listened carefully. Then he led the way out of the wine shop, followed by Mr. Lorry and his companion. As they went out, Madame Defarge's eyes remained fixed on her knitting. Outside, the wine shopkeeper led Mr. Lorry and Lucie Manette through a doorway.
"He is at the top, and the stairs are steep," said Defarge.
"Is he alone?" asked Mr. Lorry.
"Of course. It was necessary. He is greatly changed."
Mr. Lorry and Miss Manette followed Defarge up the dark stairway. At the top, he took out a key.
"So the door is locked, my friend?" said Mr. Lorry, surprised.
"Yes. He was locked up in the Bastille for so long that he would be frightened now if his door was left open. He might hurt himself. He might die," Defarge whispered, so that the young lady could not hear.
But her face was still pale and anxious as Defarge put the key in the lock and turned it noisily. Mr. Lorry put his arm round Miss Manette and held her.
"Come in," he encouraged. "The worst will be over in a minute. Then all the good you can bring him will begin."
The small window of the room was almost covered by a little wooden door, making everything so dark it seemed impossible that anyone could work there. Yet the white-haired man, sitting on the far side of the room with his back to the door, was bent forward, busily making shoes.
"I see that you're still hard at work," said Defarge.
After a moment, a voice replied,
"Yes, I'm working."
The voice was weak, lifeless, hopeless.
"May I let in a little more light?" said Defarge.
Defarge pushed open the little wooden door, letting light into the room. The workman was sitting on a bench with an unfinished shoe on his knee. He had an untidy white beard, a thin, pale face, and very bright eyes. His weak and bony body showed beneath his dirty clothes. Mr. Lorry stepped forward, and the shoemaker looked up, showing no surprise or interest.
"You have a visitor," said Defarge. "Tell him what kind of shoe you're making."
"It's a young lady's walking shoe," replied the shoemaker.
"And what is the maker's name?"
105 North Tower.
"Have you always been a shoemaker?" asked Mr. Lorry.
"No, I learned it here. I asked to be allowed to teach myself, and after a long while, it was agreed. I have made shoes ever since."
"Monsieur Manette, do you not remember me?" said Mr. Lorry.
The shoe dropped to the ground.
"Look at me. Don't you recognize me? Is there no memory of an old banker rising in your mind?"
While Mr. Lorry was speaking, Lucy Manette had stepped forward out of the shadows and now stood looking at the shoemaker with her hands held out. The shoemaker looked at the visitors for a while, then picked up the shoe and continued. Lucy quietly moved closer. Then, as the shoemaker reached for his knife, he noticed her dress and raised his eyes to her face. He stared at her with a fearful look. With tears running down her face, Lucy put her hands to her lips and then held them out to him.
"You're not the jailer's daughter?"
he asked.
"No."
She sat down beside him on the bench and laid her hand on his arm. He reached out, little by little, and finally touched her golden hair. Then he took a dirty cloth from inside his shirt, carefully opened it, and picked up a long golden hair.
"It's the same," he said. "She laid her head upon my shoulder the night I was brought to the North Tower. But how can it be? What is your name, gentle girl?"
His daughter dropped to her knees in front of him.
"Oh, my dear," she said, "I'll tell you my name and the names of my mother and father, but not here. Let me kiss you."
Her bright hair lay upon his cold white head, as if it were the light of freedom shining on him. She put her arms round him and held him like a child.
"I'll tell you that your suffering is over and that I have come to take you away from it," she continued. "We'll go back to England to be at peace, away from France, where you have been so badly wronged. And I'll kneel before you and ask your forgiveness for never sharing your suffering, because my poor mother hid it from me."
At that, her father began to cry so desperately that Defarge and Mr. Lorry had to cover their faces. When, at last, calm had returned, the two men came forward.
"Could everything be arranged for us to leave Paris at once?" Lucy asked them.
"We'll organise a carriage and travelling papers as quickly as we can," said Defarge.
"Then I'll take care of him until you return," she said.
Late that evening, as the shoemaker was helped down the steep stairs, he stared around himself.
"Do you remember this place, Father?"
Lucy asked.
"No, I don't remember. It was very long ago."
It was clear that he had no memory of coming to this house. The street outside was empty and dark as Defarge led the way to the carriage. Only Madame Defarge was there, knitting by the wine shop door. Then, just as Lucy's father was getting into the carriage, he stopped and asked for his shoemaking things.
"I'll get them,"
Madame Defarge called to her husband. She quickly returned and handed everything into the carriage. All through the cold, dark journey back to Calais, Mr. Lorry once more had dreams of digging a buried man out of his grave. What had the man lost, and could it ever be brought back?
"I hope you're glad to be recalled to life,"
he asked the shoemaker in his dream.
"I can't say," came the answer.